We are in the sixth chapter of the book of Daniel. The sixth chapter of the book of Daniel. I'm going to assume that everybody has read the sixth chapter. Maybe not. Okay. Several have. Pardon? Good. Very good. In our study tonight, I want to review just a little bit from the first chapter through the sixth chapter. We see God's providence in history. In the first chapter, we see Daniel's determination to be pure. In the second chapter, we read of King Nebuchadnezzar's dream and his desire that some would tell him the dream and then the interpretation thereof. We see that Daniel tells him the interpretation of the dream and relates it to things that God has revealed that shall take place in the latter days. And in that chapter, we saw that during the days of the fourth empire, the Roman Empire, the God of heaven would set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And then in the third chapter, we read of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to use their Babylonian names, and how that they faced the fiery furnace if they would not bow down before the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And of course they would not do so, and the king had asked them if it was on purpose that they had neglected to do so. And they explained to him that it was not on purpose, but their God could deliver them out of the hand of the king. And even if he did not, we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the image that thou hast set up. And in the fourth chapter, Nebuchadnezzar has another dream. And in this dream, he sees a tree, a huge tree. And of course, there are animals that rest under the tree and birds that are in the branches of the tree. And he beheld a watcher that cut down the tree. And then in verse 15, there is a change in the pronouns that are used. We might want to call our attention to that. Nevertheless, leave the stump of its roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass. In the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be as the beast in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. And we noted that that was the consequence of his pride, that he would be humbled and he would eat grass like an ox and so forth. And then in the fifth chapter, Belshazzar, and we talked about whether that was the son or the grandson and so forth of King Nebuchadnezzar, but Belshazzar has an experience, I guess we would call that, where he saw a hand writing on the wall, and one knee smote against the other. And we saw in that chapter that he was told essentially that the kingdom would be taken from him, that his kingdom would not endure, and he would learn, like his father, that God rules in the kingdoms of men. Now, in the sixth chapter, let me turn back to this. In the sixth chapter, we see that Darius is ruling, and we see that Darius is king of the Medes in the Medo-Persian Empire, cast Daniel into the den of lions. And we're going to talk about that tonight in some detail, but as we begin, we want to notice the second part of the book of Daniel. The second part of the book of Daniel, in all honesty, is much more complicated than the first six chapters. It deals with Daniel's dream of the four beasts, Daniel's dream of the ram and the goat, Daniel's prayer and the vision of the 70 weeks, and Daniel's vision of the time of the end. And I think we will see that as Daniel writes and as we get further into the book, that Daniel is not talking about the end of time, but Daniel is prophesying concerning some things that will come to pass at the end of the Jewish age, the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. So we'll talk about that when we get to it. But in this sixth chapter, let's begin, if you would please, in verse 1. It says, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps who should be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three presidents of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might give account unto them, and that the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was distinguished above the presidents and the satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Now this created a problem. I want to comment just briefly on who Darius is as far as his reign is concerned. We read of Cyrus, the king of the Medo-Persian Empire, and of course that is a good way to express that. Darius was appointed by Cyrus to reign over the portion that had belonged to the kingdom of Babylon. And so he was actually the king, as it were, over the Chaldean Empire. The Medo-Persian Empire was a bit larger than the Chaldean Empire. Cyrus ruled over all of it. Darius ruled over the Chaldean portion of it. And that helps us, I think, to understand a little bit about who Darius is in the relation of history to Cyrus, the king of the Medo-Persian Empire, that's discussed in the book of Ezra and 2 Chronicles and in Isaiah chapter 44 and 45 as being the one who would release the Israelites to return to their homeland. But we've noted that the theme of this great book is that God rules in the kingdoms of men. And that expression, or expressions similar to it, occur over and over in this portion of our study. In chapter 1, for example, in verse 17, God is given credit for giving knowledge to these four youths. It says, "Now as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams." God has given the credit for whatever these young men are. In the second chapter and in verse 21, the second chapter and in verse 21, it tells us that he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that have understanding. And then in verse 28 of this same chapter, it says, "But there is a God in heaven that revealeth secrets, and he hath made known unto King Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days." God is given the praise and the glory for all of the things that he has done in ruling in the kingdoms of men. In the 47th verse of this same chapter, King Nebuchadnezzar says unto Daniel, "Of a truth, your God is the God of gods, and the King or Lord of kings, and the revealer of secrets, seeing thou hast been able to reveal this secret." Nebuchadnezzar gives praise unto God. But interestingly enough, throughout this book, we find that God is not spoken of as the God. He's spoken of as one among a number of gods by these who worship and praise him for the greatness that he has manifested. In the third chapter, and in verse 28, the third chapter, verse 28, the writer begins, "Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, Blessed is the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel to deliver his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and have yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God." Now notice again how that God is referred to as one of many gods. But yet we see that the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is given the praise by the king. And if you'll notice in the fourth chapter, in verse 2, Nebuchadnezzar the king, as he appears to be the writer, the revealer of the things that take place in the fourth chapter, it says, "It seemed good unto me to show the signs and wonders that the Most High God hath wrought toward me. How great are his signs and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation." And then in chapter 4, verse 17, "The sentence is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdoms of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will, and setteth up over it the lowest of men." And then in verse 25, once again, it says that "thou shalt be driven from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field, and thou shalt be made to eat grass as oxen, and shall be wet with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou shalt know that the Most High rules or ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And of course, as we come toward the end of this chapter, Nebuchadnezzar says at verse 34, I bless the Most High, and praised and honored him that liveth forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom from generation to generation. The king is learning who God is, but he never refers to him as the God, the one and only God. He refers to him in these passages as one of many gods. In chapter 5, noticing in verse 21, chapter 5, verse 21, reference once again is made to King Nebuchadnezzar, until he knew that the Most High God ruleth in the kingdom of men, and that he setteth up over it whomsoever he will. Time and time again, we see emphasis placed upon this theme of the book, God ruling in history. And we see that to be important as we get to the 7th through the 12th chapters of the book of Daniel. But in our study tonight, in the 6th chapter, we want to notice a change in the kings. In verse 30, well, let me back up, if I may, to verse 29. In verse 29, then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold about his neck and made proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. Daniel is getting a place of prominence. We saw that as he was taken captive as a young man, he was given a place of political importance, and that ladder he continues to climb, it seems. In verse 30 and 31, in that night Belshazzar the Chaldean king was slain, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. Babylon fell, and it fell without a single battle, as we read in these verses, in the concluding verses of chapter 5. But in chapter 6, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom these men, 120 satraps or satraps, meaning viceroy or lieutenant, prince, protector of the realm. They had a position somewhat like a governor. And Darius appoints three presidents to be over these. And Daniel is distinguished above all of these because of his excellent spirit. Now, that would create, no doubt, a background for some to become upset, jealous, envious of Daniel because of the position that he holds over them. And so Daniel is distinguished, the Bible tells us in these verses, above the others because of his excellent experience. The point, I think, that we need to see at this point has to do with Daniel's ability to increase in his political activity and to increase in his business relations because of his integrity. It's recognized who he is, the authority that he has, and the boldness with which he does his work. Darius thought to set Daniel in verse 3 over the whole realm. Now, can again you imagine how that would have gone over with the others, the 120 satraps and the other presidents that are appointed over these governors? In verse 4, it says, then the presidents and the satraps sought to find occasion against Daniel as touching the kingdom, but they could find no occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. I want to ask you, if somebody went over your life with a microscope, you think they could find something to complain about? Something in which they might find some lack of integrity that they might accuse you before the king. But that was not so in the case of Daniel. And I think that speaks a volume about Daniel. He was obviously involved in a great number of very responsible events as the position he held demanded. But all of these who would try to find a fault with him couldn't find anything to complain about. In verse 5 it says, then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Now Daniel was expected before God to do some things that he was committed to do, that these who are his accusers believe we won't find any fault unless we look there. Now, in Acts the 5th chapter, we see that the apostles were demanded of their superiors as far as political maneuvers might be concerned, the leaders among the Jews, to not serve Jesus anymore, not to preach or teach in His name. And they said, we cannot but speak in the name of Jesus. And we cannot submit to the rulers under these circumstances. Daniel could not do anything else but to obey the law of God. I mean, that was his choice. That was the only choice, obviously, that he saw. It says, then these presidents, verse 6, and satraps assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom and deputies and satraps and counselors and the governors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a strong interdict that those or whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Number one, was that true? When they say that all of the presidents and the deputies of the kingdom and so forth gathered together and we have come up with this interdict that we want you to impose, was it true? Randy's shaking his head. Why? Why wasn't it true?
There's no evidence for the text. It just says that the commissioners and satraps came by agreement.
All right.
These two groups of men came together, and they said that a whole bunch of groups of men came together.
All right. Who do we know wasn't there, David? Daniel wasn't there. Now, Daniel is being considered as the one who is to be over the whole realm. And that's what's prompted this whole occasion. But Daniel is not a part of this meeting. Another thing that I want us to see is that these who have come together, as it were, assembled together, a tumultuous crowd of people, in other words, just an angry mob consisting of these, directing their anger toward Daniel, who is it that's come up with this petition or written the petition? Okay. They propose this to the king, don't they? I don't believe that there is evidence necessarily that the king has written this petition. The leaders or the governors and so forth, they are responsible for this and they present this statute to the king to make a strong interdict. Now, we might raise the question, why? Why did the king go along with this?
It appealed to his pride.
Oh, yes. In what way? All right.
All right.
So they're prompted by envy and jealousy. They appeal to his pride, and he signs the interdict. But notice in verses 4 and 5, if they're going to find any occasion against him, it's going to have to be on the basis of his appeal to somebody other than the king. Now, the snare is set. In Psalms chapter 37, in verses 32 and 33, the text tells us that the wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him. Jehovah will not leave him in his hand nor condemn him when he is judged. When we read about Daniel and the circumstance in which he is, what is it that Daniel is assured of and what from that can we take home with us? That's right. That God would take care of him. Daniel had reason to believe that. And do we have reason to believe that? I think sometimes our faith is faltered when we come to the test, perhaps like Daniel was put to the test in this context. He understood that loyalty to God came first, that came before even loyalty to the king. I think we saw that in the example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes. All right.
And we can't develop a strong
Well, what do we do about it? Okay.
We're sharing the word, and we keep learning because we have to study to answer these questions, and we get involved that way.
Okay.
And it also, when we're dealing, as you might say, sponsoring somebody into the church, that carries with it a responsibility and accountability to that person.
You mean when I teach somebody the gospel, then there's something I need to do to follow up with that?
Absolutely.
Well, yes. Now, that involves a commitment that has been made long before the application. It's easy for us to read a passage of Scripture and say, well, yes, that's true, that's how that is. It may even be easy to memorize that text and say, yes, I've learned what that text says. But it's altogether a different thing in time of trial or temptation to put that text into practice. One of the things, of course, that I would like for us all to be able to do, and that is when we are tested, to be able to call to mind what the text says. Because that in itself will strengthen us and help us. But there is no overcoming the test until we make up our minds that we're going to do what the text says. You can memorize the text, but if you don't practice it...
That seems to be the great mystery that only God knows, and that is, if and when we make that decision, nobody knows except God, not even us.
Well, that's where we want to be, and that's what we're striving for. With the example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, very similar to the text now of the sixth chapter with Daniel. The test is, are you going to do what you know to do? Certainly.
That his decision to be that way is a mystery. It's almost a serendipity. Some know, some won't. But once we know he made the decision, it's no mystery that his faith was that deep because of his consistent and involvement.
But does that mean we can't do that?
Oh, no, we're expected to do that.
We're expected to do that. Chris, comment. That's right.
You know, it wasn't a matter of having started your practice but now having to dig down deep and find some strength that he'd never had before.
Did other people know that about Daniel?
Later on in chapter 6, even the king knew that again, you constantly serve God.
That's right. And that becomes effective, I think, Daryl, to see this as a pattern.
It's called a habit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's made this a habit of his life or a pattern in his life. To be faithful to God. And then when something comes along to attempt to upset that, he won't let that happen. Yes, David?
Taking into account the apostles, Peter was not the only one who said, I'll stick by you. I think they all said it. And then they all fled. And they don't count. But what I'm getting at is,
okay.
So now the test is I'm not going to do that next time. And praying is Daniel prayed. And Christ was always praying. And I think that's a lot of times where our strength comes from.
Well, certainly.
We know that we're men. And
That's right. We've got to have it. David?
Well, as pointed out, Daniel was a man of prayer. And this wasn't anything new. It's so evident that that's how these men knew what to do to ensnare him. They knew he was a man of prayer, whether the decree was made or not.
And they knew when.
And they knew when. And so, I mean, it wasn't, like Chris said, it wasn't anything new. This was very obvious, not even to his enemies.
All right, that's right. We must grow to a state, Daryl, to where we can overcome those kind of trials. And, of course, that's the instruction of Ephesians, the third chapter. In verse 14, he says, "For this cause I bow my knees unto the Father." We've got to surrender, and surrender it all to Him. James makes an interesting comment in line with the discussion that we're having in verse 2 of chapter 1. When he says, "Count it all joy, my brethren, when you fall into manifold temptations, knowing that the proving of your faith worketh patience, and let patience have its perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, lacking in nothing." Does that have any application to Daniel? Daniel was faithful through trials, as you pointed out, Chris. He does the very thing he had always been doing. Let's drop on down just a little bit into the text, and notice beginning at verse 8. It says, "Now, O king, establish the interdict, and sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Wherefore, King Darius, sign the writing and the interdict." Now, Richard, we were talking just a little bit before services, you and James, about why a nation would have such a law that once it's written down, it can't be changed. And we might look at that and say, well, that's kind of a foolish law to make, but I guess if you had the authority to make the law, you would have the authority to enforce it. And the king had made this law now that he has signed it, and he couldn't go back on it. And perhaps we might speculate a little bit on reasons why that's true. Pride and a number of other things might enter into the picture, Randy. But he had written this down, and he couldn't go back on it. In verse 10 it says, "And when Daniel knew that the writing was signed..." Look at that. "When Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house. Now his windows were open in his chamber toward Jerusalem. And he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime." Daniel knew that this thing had been signed. He was not a part of the decision, but word has come to him about this interdict. He knows that it's been signed. And he doesn't change his practice at all. He doesn't even close his windows or go into a place where he can't be seen. He leaves everything just as it was and continues his practice just as he had. It says in verse 11, "Then these men assembled together and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God." Again, these make no separation between one true and living God and multiple gods. They believe that Daniel is simply worshiping and serving and asking petition of his God. Now, I want us to get that firmly fixed in our minds. They don't understand that there's one God, and thus the reason why they're upset. Daniel is serving this God, and he needs to be serving this God or these gods according to the interdict of the king. And they're upset by that. Now, if you put your place or yourself into their place, you might understand the worldly thinking of that. But to realize the distinction between one true God and their gods certainly could be an upsetting thing if we consider how they felt about it. It says, "Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's interdict. Hast thou not signed an interdict?" Now, notice, if you will, that they're placing the king over a barrel. Their argument is sound. You've signed this, haven't you? Now, obviously he can't lie his way out of that. He had signed this. Now, having signed this, what are you going to do about Daniel? There's a problem, and it has to be resolved. He said that every man that maketh a petition unto any god or man within 30 days, save unto thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. The king answered and said, "The thing is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which altereth not." Now, we read back over here that once it had been made, verse 8, signed and became authentic, then it can't be changed. The king is well aware of that. But what's he going to do now about Daniel? About Daniel.
When he signed it, he thought Daniel was part of it. And they said, well,
that's what they've said. Of course, they misrepresented it. All of them were not present, and of course, Daniel was not present. I missed something that I have on the chart that I want to go back to and cover before we go on just a little farther. And that is the practice of the Jews to pray three times a day. The psalmist indicates that that was certainly the Jewish custom during that time. And to have one's windows open toward Jerusalem, that too was something that was customarily practiced among the Jews. And then to pray on bent knee. I think sometimes we think that the only position we can be in to pray is simply to bow our heads. But what did the Jews do when they got on their knees to pray to God? What was that but an expression of humility, an expression of the exoneration of God? Now, when we bow our heads, we do that, but how many of us would feel perhaps uncomfortable to be on our knees or laying out prostrate on the floor to pray unto God? We see the humility that is and the dignification that serves the occasion when these prayed unto God, and to pray with thankfulness. I want to notice this point in passing. In Philippians, the 4th chapter, beginning at verse 4, Paul writes, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your forbearance be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. In nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus. Pray with supplication, with thanksgiving, letting your request be made known unto God." Now, one of the things that we are commanded to pray for, according to 1 Timothy chapter 2, has to do with those who are kings and those who are in high place, that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and gravity. Any application to Daniel? When he went in and prayed three times unto God, you suppose he prayed for the king? Was that a part of his responsibility? But now the king has made an edict that he's going to kill anybody that asks a favor of anybody else within this 30-day period. And that includes Daniel. But Daniel understands that the king is really not his enemy. He prays on behalf of the king and offers thanks just as he's been instructed to do and as his custom has been. But these who are the enemies say to the king, "Haven't you signed this?" King says, "Yes." That's the law, and of course it must be implemented. Verse 13, "Then answered they and said before the king, that Daniel..." The wording of that just kind of makes you grin a little bit, because you see their animosity just in the statement. "That Daniel, who is of the children of the captivity of Judah, regardeth not thee, O king, nor the interdict that thou hast signed, but maketh his petition three times a day. That Daniel..." Well, they're pretty particular about who they're talking about. The one that you've exonerated and made him to be over the presidents, the one that you're considering to set over the whole realm, it's that Daniel that we're concerned about. Now, what are you going to do with him? Well, what is the king going to do with him? Verse 14, "Then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased." Well, who was he displeased with? Himself. He's been trapped. He does. He's trying to find out somehow where he will not have to do what he signed into law that he must do. And so he was sore displeased and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to rescue him. You're right, Carolyn. He spent the rest of the day trying to figure out some way that Daniel might be relieved of these awful consequences of being cast into the lion's den. And by the way, you'll notice that the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego under the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar were to be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. But now that the Medes and the Persians are in power, it would seem that their means of execution is to throw someone into the lions. Just a slight difference in their way of getting rid of somebody, but it amounts to the same thing. That Daniel. So the king is sore displeased, And he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored the rest of, or till the going down of the sun to rescue him. Then these men assembled together unto the king, and said unto the king, Know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no interdict nor statute which the king established may be changed. Now this is the third time that we've got these men assembling together. And it's an angry mob of people that are in charge, if you please, demanding of the king that something be done with Daniel. They've set the trap. They've sprung the trap. And now the king has to do something about it. This is the third time that it's stated in the text that the king can't go back on what he has said. It's been written down, and it has to be done. Now, any questions or comments just here? Yes, Randy?
Back to verse 10. About the... what does toward Jerusalem be? Continue kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. I was looking at the passage in Psalms. That's Psalm 56. The Psalm of David. And he mentions that he, in verse 17, evening and morning and at noon, I will complain and murmur to me, and hear my voice, who will be my soul in peace from the battle which is against me. That's a far cry from a command.
True. Right. It's not a command. It was the practice. Yeah.
Yeah. But I just mean, Daniel wasn't obeying the command of God.
Right.
By opening his windows toward Jerusalem and praying for them.
That's right.
It was a practice he was in the habit of doing.
That's right.
As a personal practice.
That's right.
Worship and practice.
That's right. That's right. It was not uncommon among the Jews, but it was not commanded. You're right.
Right. So, in essence, by opening up his windows and continuing his practice, he, like you said, he wasn't hiding in a corner. He was challenging. He knew exactly what the king's edict was, and he knew that they were going to have to follow it.
You're suggesting that if he had stopped the practice, he wouldn't have been disobeying the command, per se.
Right. He wouldn't have been disobeying God by stopping the practice. But in essence, he was challenging them.
Well, I don't know if I'd use the word challenge. That's a little bit of a strong word, because it's Daniel that's being tested here. He's just doing what he always did. He's not changing anything because of the decree. He's just going to do what he's always been doing, and he's not changing because of this decree that the king or any others have written.
It'd be like if there was a law of our land down there, it was illegal to read your Bible in public, and I had the practice of reading my Bible on the training today. Just to keep doing what I always did, I don't have to read my Bible on the training. You know what? If that was my habit, I'd keep on doing it.
There you go. And that would illustrate this point, I think. David and then David. That's been the pattern, isn't it? I've wondered sometimes in the book of Acts what these Jews that followed the apostles around did for a living, because they had to have some source of income. But it seems they're always following them around being critical. David?
I was just thinking they were commanded to pray.
Yes.
But not necessarily three times a day.
And not necessarily where they were seen.
Yeah. I think it was their custom to pray since they've been in captivity. I think it was their custom to pray towards Jerusalem, because that's where the temple was, and they couldn't go back there.
Okay.
Because they were in captivity.
Okay. Not for a long time. Okay. Any other comment or question? Yes.
I'm going to say way back when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were challenged by King Nebuchadnezzar, they didn't come back with some snappy answer. They just said, "We have no reason to answer you, O King. Our God will take care of us."
Well, that's right.
And so they weren't. They didn't challenge him. They didn't do anything. They just said,
"This is the way it is."
In God's hands, as it were.
Now there's the key. It's in God's hands, and that's a hard place to leave a lot of problems, isn't it?
Yeah.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were going to go into the midst of the fiery furnace regardless. And Daniel is going to pray regardless and leave the problem, as it were, in God's hands. Now, it's easy to preach that. But when it comes to the doing of that, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where it's hard. And Daniel's just continuing the very thing that he's always been doing. And when you've established that as a practice, it's easier to leave it in God's hands than it is to try to resolve it and find some way out. And I think there's some valuable lessons there for all of us to learn. So the enemies catch Daniel praying to God. And the interdict has been signed. The king is displeased with himself, and he hopes to deliver Daniel, who serves God continually. And in verse 16, it says, "Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel, and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, Thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." Now, why do you suppose that the king, Darius, has any confidence in the God of Daniel to make such a statement as that? How do I make that part on the bottom go away?
You need to right-click inside of it and tell it to go away.
Like so?
No. It needs to be in between icons.
Unpin?
No. We'll have to figure it out later.
Okay. So I'll just...
There you go. You did it.
Okay.
I think you need to be clicking into the screen.
Okay. What did the king, or how did the king know that God would take care of Daniel?
I don't know if he did, because later on it talks about him not sleeping the night and stuff, so it might have been said it was more of a question.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Roy?
I mean, if you think your God's going to deliver you, you're not going to, you know, like I said.
You wouldn't worry about it.
You wouldn't worry. You might not sleep real good, but you still wouldn't. It was like a king with a couple of verses down. He didn't eat, and he went without entertainment and being brought to him, and he could not sleep. So it was, he might have said it, but he still, I don't know, trying to believe.
Might be a wishful thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Roy, and then back to John.
I'll answer your question with a question.
Pardon me?
Didn't they know that, wasn't the what do you call it, the events that took place before all this, didn't they know?
Well, you'd like to think so, but the point is they recognize him as just one of many. And, well, they believe in multiple gods. And so what they want Daniel to do is to not worship this god and worship one of the others or ask of the king favors. And Daniel can't do that. No. John and then Randy. They're two different things, aren't they? Yeah. Randy?
As far as why the king said that, I think it was just encouraging words. You know?
Perhaps. Wishful thinking?
Well, yeah. He's trying to encourage him, like, you know, sorry I had to do this, but you'll be all right.
Yeah.
But I think to answer Roy's question, there's a lot of time that has gone by here.
Yeah.
We're talking about Darius now. Darius is part of a different kingdom than Nebuchadnezzar.
And the whole period of captivity.
Yeah, now Darius was
70 years.
Obviously familiar with Daniel. He was about to appoint him as a verse?
Over the whole realm.
Yeah, over the whole realm.
Verse 3.
So, I mean, I would imagine they'd spoken on a number of occasions.
I would expect.
He was not a stranger.
No.
He probably knew that this was his God. Darius might have had his own God, but he respected that Daniel has his, and back in those days, everybody had their own.
Church of your choice.
Yeah, not anything new, is it? Got Richard and then John.
I was going to say that I give Darius a little more credit, because when he went the next morning to the cave, he says, "Daniel, you okay?" And, but we see that, I don't want to give away the end of the story here, but the fact of the matter is...
I better hurry.
is that when the other folks were thrown into the lion's den, it says the lions were on them and their bones were broken by the time they hit the bottom of the cave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Darius had a little faith, though, as we see, he was up all night type thing.
Well, we've noted that early morning he went with haste to the den of lions. And when he got there, I don't know if he said, "Oh, Daniel, are you okay?" But something close to that. He said, "Oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions?" And there it appears that it is a question. Was God able to deliver you? In other words, are you all right? Now keep in mind, it's been sealed. A great stone has been in front of it, placed in front of it. And the king's signet has been put on it to seal the lion's den. It says, "Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever." Now again, I want us to notice that Daniel has not become Darius' enemy, nor does he consider Darius his enemy. He praises the king, "Live forever. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths, and they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt." I'm going to turn that off because we've got to hurry. Daniel had not done anything contrary to the will of the king that would be harmful to the king. All he had participated in was worship to God. And so he had not placed himself in an adversarial position. Then was the king exceeding glad and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he had trusted in his God. Again, much like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, there was not even the smell of smoke on them when they were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. No hurt had come upon Daniel. And the king commanded, and they brought those men that had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions. Notice, if you would please, that those who were brought were hierarchy in the political realm. They're not just nobodies down at the bottom of the ladder. These are political rulers among the kingdom of Darius, and they are brought, their children and their wives, and the lions had mastery over them and break all their bones in pieces before they came to the bottom of the den. We can see that not only were these who were Daniel's accusers cast into the den, but there were others that were affected by their sin, their families.
But you can see Darius' anger, though, because here's guys that are underneath him, but they plotted against Darius. I mean, they used him.
They used him, you're right.
He was there. They were his pawn. I mean, he was their pawn. So that's people you need to get out of the government.
That's right. That's right.
You get the idea that Darius didn't really believe in his own edict that he made there in verse 16 and again in 20 when he kind of acknowledges, you know, Daniel, your God that you serve
can overrule this.
Sort of like it's okay that you're doing that. I'm not really stuck on that line anyway.
Can overrule this. Well, to make a long story short, King Darius wrote unto all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivered and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth. Who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lions?" Now that's a powerful statement. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Daniel, as a political and businessman, prospered, it says, during this period of time of captivity. All right, there's some lessons I wanted us to look at, but we'll look at that maybe next time. Brandy.
I was just going to point out that chapter 4 is God using ungodly men as prophets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.